The Click and Go Travel Podcast, fueling your wanderlust with far-flung, off-the-beaten-track destinations to just across the water and everything in between.
Welcome back to the Click and Go Holidays Travel Podcast. In studio with Paul and I, we have a very special guest from the Portuguese Tourist Board. We have Carlos, who is the director at Visit Portugal for Ireland, in with us today to chat about Portugal and what it has to offer, from the top destinations to family holidays to wine tourism and the Portuguese trails for hiking and biking enthusiasts. Hi, Paul. Hi, Carlos. You're very welcome. Thank you
for
joining us.
Great to have you here, Carlos. Thank you very much, Jill.
And thank you very much for the invitation. I'm very, very proud to be here.
Yeah, and this kind of came off the back. Like last month, I was with you, Carlos, in Portugal at the ITAA, the Irish Travel Agents Association Conference in Alcobaça, which is in central Portugal. It's about, 1 hour, 1 hour 10 north of Lisbon.
Yes.
So like really, really lovely, beautiful city to visit. And we had our conference there and we toured around that region. So the interesting thing and what we try and do with travel conferences, because we're a bit spoiled, we're Irish travel agents, so we get to places. So when we're having a conference, we try and almost go somewhere that most of us have not been to or not your traditional destination. And then that got me thinking that it would be really good to have Carlos in to talk about Portugal and the extent of tourism and travel opportunities in Portugal for Irish consumers, because it is vast. And sometimes I think we can just get not kind of stuck in a rut, but we can just keep with what we know rather than broadening it out. So It was really on the back of that, Carlos, that I said to Jill, I said, we should get Carlos in for a podcast and talk, because there's no better man than Carlos Oliveira to talk to us about everywhere Portugal.
I'm really honored to be here. And I think it's exactly like that. The intention when we organize and when we host you in Alcobaça was also to show you a part of Portugal that you are not so familiar with. You know, I think that's the challenge. And even within our strategy, try to be more sustainable, try to drive, you know, tourism, not just to the most touristic places, but to the other parts of the territory that may need as well our support or even more our support. And there's so many nice things to do, so many nice things to explore. That was exactly our intention there.
Yeah, and it worked. Like, you know, there were over 100 people at the conference for the Irish Travel Agents Association. I don't think anybody had been to Alcobaça other than the organising committee, who had been obviously to set everything up. So it was totally new. And I'm fairly sure that most of the listeners to the podcast would not know Alcobaça or that particular central Portugal. Or, you know, if they land in Lisbon, they either stay in Lisbon or maybe head out to the Lisbon coast. Or if they land in Faro and the Algarve, they kind of spread out along the resorts. But what we want to do is talk about those destinations that we all know and love and then add in the bits that we may not be so familiar with that people can start having a think about something different. Because I think your point is very well made, Carlos, about being sustainable and spreading interest further than the core destinations. Because, you know, sustainability and over-tourism are absolutely linked. We can see it in so many countries, in so many destinations. And when we get to an over-tourism scenario, it's just not fun. It's not good for the consumer. It's not a good experience for the holidaymaker. And it also tends to get quite expensive in those destinations. Yeah. Where if we can translate sustainability into considering and looking at other places, it's less crowded, it's better value, it's something different.
A lot of times more authentic even.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It goes back to what we fell in love with those destinations for in the first place. So yes, will we kick off with some of the well-known places to go and then let's move into the newer stuff that we can talk about.
Okay.
Great. So we can kick off with the Algarve. So Carlos, with the Algarve being one of the most popular regions in Portugal, what makes it such a favorite amongst Irish holidaymakers?
I think first, the weather.
Yeah. You
know, we are blessed.
Yeah,
today
we're freezing.
I think yesterday was 18 degrees in Faro. Was the warmest city in Portugal. But we are blessed that we have over 300 days of sunshine per year. And that's something that, of course, in Ireland, we don't have that many days. So it's something that people look for it.
Yeah.
So that I would say would be the main reason. The Portuguese people is another reason, the fact that we are kind of humble, welcoming, and I think that there's a good connection between Irish and the Portuguese.
I'd agree.
My ambassador normally says that the Irish are kind of the Latin from the north.
He's a great guy. I have met him at so many events, and he is so good to the travel industry. He participates so much, Jill. Like, he's the ambassador, but he turns up at events. He turns up at key meetings. He's really interested in improving the knowledge, a bit like what we're doing today.
Yes.
You know, but a really, he's a lovely guy. He's been here quite a few years at this.
He is. He's actually leaving in March.
He's
going for another post for Canada. But I'm sure that his predecessor will continue supporting us and the tourism industry for sure.
But it's great.
That's great.
But come back to the Algarve. Yeah. So weather one, people two.
And I think then the beautiful landscapes, our beaches, because I think we have quite a bit of diversity. Even within the Algarve, you can have very long golden sandy beaches. You can have more secluded ones with beautiful cliffs. So I think, you know, small islands, you know, so there's a bit of diversity that people can choose from.
And like, we're stretching from the Spanish border.
Yeah.
Right. To possibly the most westerly tip of Europe, you know, over Cape St. Vincent and in that region. So what is how long is it? Is it like 250 kilometers?
Yeah, around 250 kilometers. Yes.
Wow, that's amazing. That's really, really cool.
Spectacular beach.
Yeah.
You have actually two natural parks within that area. So you have the Rota Vicentina, which is that one close to the Vicentina, the Cape of St. Vincent, which is a bit more dramatic, like cliffs, open Atlantic, like big swells. So it's good for even young kids that want to learn how to surf.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit more hippie in a way feeling. And then to the other side, from far all the way to the border, you have Rio Formosa, which is like a protected area where we have small islands. You have to take a little boat to go to your beach.
Wow.
Some access it by train. And it's a completely different experience.
Yeah.
And sometimes you end up going to an almost isolated beach just for yourself.
And they're the beaches, Jill, that would be near Olhão.
So exactly.
if you were getting, like, so when you're flying into Faro Airport, which is near Olhão, you're flying over those islands.
Exactly.
And they are all these gorgeous sandbank islands.
Oh, wow.
Totally natural, unspoiled, beautiful, like, real, just, you know, tropical island, you know, golden disc type, you know, as you could imagine, holiday islands. From there, like, stretching quite a way along the coast.
It's not all the way to the border with Spain, but almost, like 30, 40 kilometers before the border with Spain. And because it's a natural park, it gives you a different experience. So we don't have that thing of a seafront hotel.
Yes.
Of course, because it's a protected area, they don't allow it to build.
Yeah.
But what you have is places like Olhão, as you mentioned, Tavira, which are more traditional Portuguese cities.
Yeah.
So it'll give a bit more authenticity to the people that experience.
Yeah.
And then I think I like that thing of getting a boat, you know, it's a kind of a bit different.
Yeah, it's an adventure. It is different to what people think. And I think that kind of eastern portion of the Algarve from Faro heading towards Spain, heading to the east, like, it's flatter. Like, we use Olhão quite a lot, which is very close to Faro City, very close to Faro Airport, and Tavira and Monte Gordo for a lot of our kind of over 50s, over 60s audience in the wintertime, because those hotels are open year round and they're lived in towns. There's a sense of them being, as you say, more authentic, more real. So you don't feel it's quiet. Yes, it's quieter than the summer, no doubt, but
It's still alive.
It's definitely local people, local industries. Yeah. You know, even Faro itself. Faro has a big university.
Yeah.
During the wintertime, it's always lively.
Yeah, there's always something happening.
Yes, definitely.
And it's small. It's easy to walk around. It's really pleasant. You know, it's very nice.
Yeah.
And a great little addition to the place.
Yeah, that's great. And then just for our listeners, what would you say are the top resorts in the Algarve?
The top resorts tend to be the areas between Faro and Lagos. So those tend to be like Vila Moura, for example. It's very known for the marina, for the golf courses. So it tends to be a bit more upmarket. Then, of course, you have Albufeira, a bit younger and lively.
Yeah.
But in the surrounding areas, or in the municipality of Albufeira, you also have some secluded beaches.
Beautiful
and
beaches.
Completely different than what people think about the Albufeira, the village itself. And continues. Portimão, for example, has amazing events all around here around. So being motorcycling, you know, they have all different sorts of events there. And then there's also smaller places. And I think if you think about Alvor, the Irish market is very keen, for example, in Alvor.
Yeah, we would do well in the Alvor.
And that gives you a completely different experience because you're going back to the small fishing village.
Yeah.
Praia da Luz is another one. Those are, tend to be the more Lagos.
Lagos is lovely.
Yeah.
Gorgeous town. Like, lovely combination of a lived-in Portuguese town and stunning beaches.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's just so much choice. Like, for us in Click and Go Holidays, like Portugal, or sorry, the Algarve is always number one, number two in terms of consumer choice for the sun holiday market in any given year.
Yeah.
It's always there, thereabouts. Like, as you said, and as we know, the Algarve is pretty much year round. You know, it is not just a summer destination. There are flights year round and 18 degrees in November, and the value for money in the wintertime is just...
There's even other activities you can do.
In
the hills, on the hills, all the way from the border with Spain, all the way to Rota Vicentina, you have walking trails that you can do. You can select some. There's walking trails by the coast that people can do nowadays. Yeah. So a different thing that can be more suitable during the shoulder seasons. City breaks is another option. Bird watching. So there's quite a few other products that people can enjoy all year round in the Algarve.
And golf.
And golf.
Golf is definitely Portugal.
Yeah, it's definitely the main season, you know, shoulder season product in the Algarve and in Portugal.
And you can see why. 18 degrees in November. And like, I've been there in January working and it's been lovely. It's been 18, 19 degrees, but like sunny blue skies.
Yeah. Oh, that's what you want.
Not grey, drizzle, as I call it, miserable drizzle, but drizzle rain. Yeah.
Yeah. And the lesser known spots in the Algarve that you think holidaymakers should go to?
I think we mentioned a bit in the beginning. I would say the Tavira and the Tavira, Tavira, Olhão, that part all the way to Monte Gordo. Like, that part, I think it should be on the list because it's different, it's authentic, and it has that. I think it has a bit of magic getting the rowboat, you know, going to those seaside resorts. It's different.
Yeah, and like, and you know, because you look after so much of our marketing, like the value for money in the wintertime.
Oh,
like,
it's brilliant! You know, it's just amazing.
Incredible value.
Yeah.
So I would also add the other side. So the Rota Vicentina, so Vicentina coast, because that's also a bit different, a bit similar to your Wild Atlantic Way in a way.
And Carlos, that would be the area, just so we know, from Lagos further west.
Yeah, but it goes further north as well through the Atlantic coast. So it blends with Alentejo a little bit. So that natural park, it's been between the two regions, so the Algarve and the Alentejo. And what you have is more like very big cliffs and very long, sometimes sandy beaches overlooking the Atlantic. So you have big swells. It's a bit more dramatic in that sense. There's amazing walking tours as well. I think the most famous walking tours in Portugal are in Rota Vicentina, and you can do cycling as well, and you know, just a bit more off the beaten track. Let's put it like that.
Perfect.
Yeah. That sounds great.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Just gorgeous.
The accommodation will also be a bit different. It'll be more sometimes staying in rural houses, small houses, you know, with less than 10 rooms, you know, a bit almost like you share your meal with the owner. So that's a completely different experience than what you have in the other part, for example, of the Algarve.
Yeah.
Oh, sounds
great.
Sounds amazing. Right, well, we pop over to then the Lisbon coast. What can visitors expect from the Lisbon coast?
Again, Lisbon, I think Lisbon as a capital is quite fortunate because there is quite a bit of variety within the coastline nearby.
Mm.
The first stop tends to be always Cascais and Estoril.
Mm.
It's the part of the coast that is easy access because you can get a train direct. Yeah. In 35 minutes, 40 minutes, you are there. And that part, specifically Cascais and Estoril, is more like secluded beaches. They are a bit protected from the Atlantic.
Okay.
So it's small and sheltered. And then you have the charismatic Cascais just behind with very nice restaurants, very nice palaces and manor houses. So you have even the casino close by where Ian Fleming wrote the story of James Bond. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, so in Palacio Estoril, was it?
Palace Estoril and the casino. So he has a lot of that kind of history and stories, and it's quite interesting.
That's elegant, Jill. Yeah. It's just lovely. Like, you get that train, as Carlos was saying, right from the centre of Lisbon, and the last stop on the line is Cascais.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it only takes 35 minutes. I think it's €2 the last time I did it each way.
Wow.
And
that's cool.
So, you know, what it means is if you're looking for a beach holiday and you want a city nearby, or you're looking for kind of sophisticated, because it is sophisticated.
It's sophisticated.
It's definitely a more upmarket, more mature product. It's not clubland, partyland, rah-rah.
Yeah.
Gorgeous beaches, great golf, close to the city, lovely restaurants, lovely properties, some great hotels. Remind me what the Portuguese equivalent of Parador is.
Posada.
The Posada. It's a lovely Posada.
Citadel, just next to the marina.
Yeah. Oh, really nice. And amazing shopping. The Portuguese are phenomenal shoppers. So there's these incredible malls just inland from Cascais. There's a racetrack and they're just up there. And oh my God, out of this world. And the value. I keep coming back to the value. And I think that's why Portugal also scores so highly.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great product in terms of a holiday product, but it's also really, really good value.
Good value.
Like,
yeah.
I think I would compare kind of Cascais and Estoril to being like Dunleary.
It is.
But with a beach.
I'm fortunate to live there.
Yeah.
So I live close by. And if it has that feel.
I think
the train journey has that feel, because we are going by the sea like we are going when we're going towards, you know, Dalkey and Dalkey.
Yeah.
So it does.
Because it's that coastline. It's very lived in. You know, these are lived in towns.
Yes.
And they have hotels. So to me, it's kind of like Dunleary, Sandy Cove, Dalkey, but with good weather pretty much year-round. And the added value of having nice beaches. So it just doesn't have one Sandy Cove. It has quite a nice beach in Cascais and other beaches along the coast. And just so accessible. Like in and out to Lisbon, very close to Lisbon Airport. And a great mix of properties. You know, some lovely old kind of traditional hotels, really classical.
Yeah.
I just love it.
Feels some more modern. You have the Posadas as well.
Yeah, and then the golf up in Quinta de Marina and that area, so like really good.
I think we can even compare because it's if you are in Cascais and then you start going to the more open Atlantic, it's a bit like when we are in Dalkey and you start turning to Bray, you know, you start seeing like the bits. And I think it's a bit like that. You see a bit more dramatic beaches,
Guincho,
all the way to, you know, Sintra in the back.
Guincho is wild for windsurfing.
Oh, okay.
Like the Atlantic coast of Portugal is just windsurfer paradise. Come back to Alcabaça when we were down in, I can't remember the name of the town.
Nazaré.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I'm getting very forgetful of some of my names. But Nazaré, also windsurfing. But Guincho, very close to Lisbon coast, great for windsurfing. And you also mentioned Sintra, which is beautiful town, just inland from the towns on the Lisbon coast, just inland from Cascais and Estoril. And it was kind of summer palace or winter palace or summer palace.
It was
palace,
a summer, like our kings, the summer was too warm in Lisbon. So when they wanted to get a bit more fresh air, they would go to Sintra. Sintra is on the hills, so it's always going to be a few degrees less than it is in Lisbon. So and that's why it's so, you know, monumental. Everyone has their palaces. There's a lot of different things to explore.
Wow. It is fancy pants. Yeah, it is. It's elegance on a stunning level, because the royal family's built palaces there. So every house is almost like a palace.
Yeah.
The town is just picture postcard. It's like something Disney created, but it's natural and very accessible to Lisbon City by the train, or very accessible from Estoril and Cascais.
Yeah. And just the entire beautiful area, because, you know, if you see from Guincho, you know, you are in the door of Sintra. Everything else is also a natural park, which means that it can be great if you want to do walking, if you want to do other sorts of activities. There's also, you know, the Sintra can be an ideal place to do it.
Oh, stunning.
Of the coastline, which we cannot forget the south bank of the coast.
And that was one of the parameters again for today. So let's talk about going south of the river.
Yeah.
South of the over the bridge, over that Golden Gate Mirror Bridge. From Lisbon Airport towards Caparica and Sesimbra.
Yeah, the first part is basically a very long sandy beaches, a bit open to the Atlantic, and tends to be where the majority of the Lisbon people go to the seaside. During the summertime, you know, if they have during the weekend, they tend to cross the bridge
to Caparica
and Caparica all the way to Meco, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very nice long sandy beach. But I think the best.
Stunning. It's almost like Algarve. It is like you have the ochre cliffs, and you have, like, the further you go down when you're out of Caparica, you're down to the cliffs, and it's Algarve like. And then vast, wide sandy beaches.
Yeah.
And
And you'd fly into Lisbon to get to
this is all flying into Lisbon.
Okay.
This is Lisbon region still.
Okay.
This is still Lisbon
region.
From
Lisbon airport to get to Caparica is only 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So.
Yeah. And from Lisbon down to Sesimbra, probably 45 minutes.
45 minutes, wow. Yeah.
So
it's nice old, like, kind of compact that you can kind of visit all those places.
Sesimbra, to me, is a perfect... If you've been to Qashqai and Estoril and you like that area... I think you'd love Sesimbra. Since I've come back, I've managed to convince a few of my friends to go to Sesimbra. So they booked to Sesimbra for next year on the back of like photographs and video posts that we've done and show them. And they were looking for something different.
And I think that the part of Sesimbra, because it's a natural park, the Acabe, the mountains. And I don't think that when you see those images, you'd say that's Portugal.
No way.
Because it's completely different than what you used to see about Portugal. It's, again, the seaside turns, so they are secluded beaches. But behind you, it's just beautiful green. It's a beautiful natural park. Some of those beaches you can only access by boat.
Yeah.
So they are very, very exclusive in a way. And the natural park, I have a friend that once told me that the most beautiful part of Portugal when you're seeing by boat going around is the Rábida Mountains. It's the beautiful of the landscapes, completely kind of raw in a way.
What can you just pronounce that mountains again? What
Rábida.
Rábida.
Rábida Mountains, yes.
Wow. But yeah.
Sesimbra is part of it. Sesimbra is there.
Could not believe. I had been to Setúbal before.
Yes.
And I thought I had been to Sesimbra, but I wasn't. Because when we got to Sesimbra this year, like we after the conference, went down to Sintra for a couple of nights and then went down to Sesimbra for a couple of nights. Oh, breathtaking. If there's anywhere I'm going to keep talking about for the next year, it's going to be Sesimbra.
Okay, wow.
It is stunning, stunning. What a beautiful town. Stunning beaches, some great hotels.
And the fish, the restaurants.
Yeah. Like we were there too late, it was October, so the sardines, we got a few sardines in the early part of the holiday, but then the sardines were gone and I'm a sardine freak. So like, and like the sardines there are proper fish size. They're not the little pinchy things that you get here. But I just thought Sesimbra was something special. And I thought... I don't think people realize how accessible it is from Lisbon Airport. You know, Uber in Portugal is just a godsend. You know, means really cheap transfers from the airport down to Sesimbra, 45 minutes, I think it was like 40.
It's probably
45.
Cheaper than me going to Dalkey on my.
from here. Listen, it was, you know, incredible value.
Yeah.
And I know we offer transfers, but at times when Uber works in a destination, we're better off suggesting to people. And that would be one where I would say to people, you're going to save money by using Uber
because
it's just great.
And even to travel around, if they want to explore the beautiful vineyards there is around. They have the very special cheese as well in the region. So I think it's all those little add-ons that you can you know, increase. Even cultural, they have amazing monuments that you can visit around, golf courses as well.
And like really nice hotels, like four or five hotels right on the seafront. So you're pretty much like the town is behind you. The hotels are right at the seafront. Not overly touristy, not overly commercial, a real lived in feel to the place. We wandered into one of the hotels and I was just, because I'm just curious, I have to go into every hotel when I'm there. And I said to the lady behind the counter, do you mind if I have a look? Because there was a rooftop pool. And she said, oh, where are you from? I said, Dublin. And she said, so am I. And she's living there. She's married to a Portuguese guy. So we did a great old chat. And she was telling me about different groups of Irish people who come back. And once they go there, they keep going back going back all the time. And again, the value, the quality of the food and the prices we were paying were not your traditional tourist prices. I think it's probably more geared to the domestic market.
It is. I think it's one secret they probably want to keep.
Cat's out of the bag now. It's on clickandgo.com. It's on our website, and we're going to be doing training about it. And we're going to be talking about it. And we're going to be educating them.
Getting people to go.
Well, I love finding something different and somewhere alternative for people to have a look at and take a chance on a holiday after somebody has been there, and we can talk about it. Like really knowledge.
And you mentioned it's also the proximity because it's so close to Lisbon. That's what people don't even imagine, that they have that beautiful natural park with this on offer 45 minutes away from Lisbon.
And I think what you don't realize is you have that proximity and yet you have that difference, but you have everything at your doorstep. Like you're not going to somewhere isolated. You're not going to somewhere that is just a hotel out on its own, removed from everything, where you're going to have to, you know, be hoofing it about to find more choice for restaurants or shops or bars or just for something to do. It literally is all on your doorstep.
Wow, that's brilliant.
Yeah, it really is a hidden gem. Like, yeah. We've got to let the cat out of the bag on this one, Carlos. It's only Ireland. There's only 5 million of us. Don't you don't need to worry. Yeah.
It's also our job to you know, those are the ones that also need more our support because they are not as known.
Yeah.
And we should support these little places. They are still kind of hidden gems, you know, so people can explore and know them.
But I'm convinced people would have an absolutely amazing holiday there because the holiday infrastructure in terms of the hotels, the restaurants, the bars, everything. And my God, the beaches. Like, oh my God. Like, wait, we're doing a couple of social posts following this with Sesimbra. Oh, they're knockout. Like, they are knockout.
Yeah. You know, another thing is that you're very close to Setúbal and you can also take the boat to
Troia
and the Alentejo, which will be, again, a very long sandy beach. And, you know, combining, for example, the two can be a great way to have a kind of a different experience.
Yeah, we went down to Setúbal one of the days just for shopping and variety of things to do and all of that. Like another, like there's just so much on your doorstep. Even when we were in Alcobaça going back to the conference, we went out to Abidos, which is UNESCO World Heritage Site. It is a must do for anybody. It is just out of this world as a walled town, just picture postcard amazing and all that great Portuguese hospitality and food and all of the little pastel natas, I know.
And Ovid's itself it's a very historical place in Portugal because it was the queen's village because the king would give to the king always gives that village to the queen, so it was always had a bit of that strong history around Ovid's, and they have an amazing calendar of events happening there. The Christmas market there. You know, imagine all the village converted into a Christmas market. It's something that it's definitely out of this world. Yeah, they have a chocolate event. They have a medieval fair that you could rely a bit more. So throughout the year, there's always something happening around Ovid's.
And like great book festivals there.
There was all the libraries.
And like there's hotels there now, Jill, and a Posada, I think.
There's a Posada as well. Yeah.
So like even for an alternative city break, I think sometimes when we think city breaks, we're always thinking the capital city.
Yeah.
There are really great alternatives very close by that give you a different experience. And so you have the benefit of all the flight frequency into there, but you have the proximity of these alternative cities because when you've done a city, you've kind of done the city.
Yeah.
And you'd have a much more relaxed, chilled, laid-back time.
And even close by, you have Peniche. I don't think you've been in Peniche.
No.
It was just like 15 kilometers. So closer to the hotel where we had lunch. So it was down a bit that road.
So Praia del Rei. Yes, I saw the signs.
Yeah. So, and that's kind of a fishing village that now is becoming known a bit more because of surfing, because the World Surf League organizes the big event there every year.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of surfers going there. So even for younger people, that's a very, very lively place to be. There's always something happening. So you have a bit of tradition and then 15 kilometers away, you have a bit of a hippie kind of different feel.
And then further up towards Nazaré, where we were talking about earlier in the windsurfing, what's the movie that was filmed in Nazaré? That was the windsurfer guy doing some amazing movie about catching that monster wave.
It's the big wave surfing.
Yeah.
McNamara. That was from Hawaii that he came along and everybody knows the wave. The wave is there, but nobody actually tried to surf it. And he was the one that's, you know, with the jet skis and everything.
It's all right over social. It's all over YouTube. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's the biggest wave in the world, surfable wave in the world at the moment.
Yeah.
And the big difference from other big waves, the other big waves, they tend to be in the middle of the ocean. People don't actually
see
it.
Yeah.
And the good thing of that wave, and there's that lighthouse, and the way they film a bit behind the lighthouse, it looks like the wave is coming over the lighthouse, which is quite dramatic, is that everybody can actually sit down and witness the people surfing the big wave.
So it's all down to this kind of underwater cavern that creates this channel and funnel for the water to go through.
Okay.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
well,
the water just jumps out, basically.
Well, that's really cool.
Maybe
sounds exciting.
Let's move on to Madeira, though, because we've lots to get through.
And just on Madeira, what are the top resorts to visit in Madeira?
Yeah, Madeira Funchal tends to be the main, and it's the sunniest part of the island.
Yeah.
So that kind of welcomes people too, and I think it's a vibrant city.
Yeah.
It has a lot of cultural, little, very nice squares.
Yeah.
They have a lot of arts and crafts with their embroidery. Then they have the wine production. So they have things that come from legacy, from generations. And on the same time, you have amazing restaurants and bars, quite vibrant, a bit younger, with all the doors, different decorations. So I think it's definitely suitable for all different
It's transformed.
Ages. Like, yes, yeah,
I remember the first time I went to Madeira was about 1990, and then I was back about 2010, and I couldn't believe the difference. Maybe it was 2015, and then we were back this year for holidays in June. Oh my God! Well, listen to the other podcasts on Madeira if you want to hear just 30 minutes of wow about Madeira.
Yeah.
But like, it's everything you said.
I think people are not so much aware of Madeira and what Madeira has to offer.
Yeah.
And, Madeira is green, but it's not necessarily because it rains a lot. It has a lot of humidity in the mountains, in the hills, and then they have the levadas, the irrigation channels to bring the water down to the other parts of the island. But it's basically a very pleasant weather all year round.
It's stunning.
So summer never really goes...
No, above. We were there at the very end of June, the last week in June, 24, 25 degrees.
But that's the normal. And then winter is never really below 20, 18, 20. So it's always pleasant all year round.
It was just gorgeous because, like, I think people are getting a bit anxious about heat in the summer months in parts of Europe for sun holidays. Whereas Madeira is in the Atlantic, it's 1 hour north of the Canary Islands.
Yeah.
But it's an hour and a half flying time south of Lisbon. So it's in a perfect location. And it's just a gorgeous island with so much to see, so sophisticated. Great hotel offering.
Yes.
Absolutely brilliant. Great value for money in terms of what they do. And my God, they know how to do festivals. They are, they have to be the king of festivals. Like, we were there for the Atlantic Festival in June. So every Saturday we got to see the fireworks. Now, we were only there for one Saturday, so we got to see the fireworks that they showcase on New Year's Eve, because Madeira is world famous
for its New Year's Eve
fireworks.
Yeah.
Now, it has some tough competition with Sydney and Dubai, but like it is... It
but is. For a small island in Portugal compared with a big country.
Yeah. Like, seven or eight cruise ships move into Funchal Port just to watch
the
fireworks.
Awesome.
And then they sail off after the you cannot get a room in Funchal for New Year's Eve.
And it's even the way that Funchal is, like, it's beautiful. An amphitheater room, overlooking the bay. So, and you have fireworks from the sea, from land. So everywhere you look around, you'll have fireworks.
And so much nice to see and do. Like, pristine water to swim in. It was gorgeous temperature in June. We were swimming in the sea all the time.
But it's on the Gulf Stream, so actually the temperatures are nice in winter as well. Yeah. So it's never cold.
Yeah.
And like, friends of mine have gone down in the winter, January, February, and had a stunning holiday. And I think it's so different. It's you get nice weather, not too hot, generally sunny.
Yeah.
I think there's a misconception that Madeira doesn't have good weather. It does. Have a look at my videos and my photographs. It does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then just being different, like, so much to see and do. So it's not just a flip and flop, lie on a sunbed for the whole time you're there. There's so much to see and do, whether you're in Funchal or going off to the west of the island or the east of the island. And
I'll give a tip. So sometimes people say, oh, there's not like a beach as such.
Yeah.
There's something that Madeira, you have direct access to the sea. You may have some a bit more pebble beach here and there. But then you have the sister island.
The Lidos and the jetties.
But the sister island of Porto Santo.
Of course.
Yeah, which is basically 2 hours on a ferry boat or even 50 minutes flight. Has a beautiful 9 kilometer sandy beach.
Wow.
Which even has, the sand has therapeutical, so good for rheumatism and things. Yeah. So they have the different spa treatments. And if you want to have a bit of days by the sea, by on the sandy beach, and a few more days a bit more cultural with a bit different kind of offering, you can combine the two islands, which can be a great
Porto Santo is just, because Madeira is an archipelago.
Yes.
So like, Porto Santo is the small neighbouring beach island, as Carly has described. Easy access, you can hop on a flight, you can get the ferry.
Yep.
But I have to say, I didn't miss a beach when I was in Madeira.
Yep.
Like, we were, our hotel, we stayed in Pastana Carlton. It was just by the ocean.
Yeah.
It had gorgeous harbour, lovely jetties. You could just hop off the pier straight into the water. You weren't doing the kind of inching in and it being cold. Well, number one, it wasn't cold, but you weren't doing the inch in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for me, yeah, sand is lovely, but like it gets everywhere. Yeah. So you could just, you can have the best of both worlds. You could just have all of the lovely sea breeze. You yeah. can have sea swimming, which I think is way better than yeah. pool swimming.
Yeah.
Really safe. And just, oh, I'm going back. I'm yeah. like, I'm going back. Yeah, listen to the Madeira podcast, yeah, folks. It's worth a listen.
Yeah. Brilliant. So will we swap over to city breaks now? So like okay. the main city breaks from in Portugal. So we've mentioned Lisbon. Maybe we could start with Lisbon in terms of the top things to do or you'd recommend to our listeners to do in Lisbon.
I think Lisbon, I love Lisbon is a bit, it's kind of a unique European capital, even on the architecture, on the people. Portugal, we traveled the world and we brought a lot from where we've been in Africa, in Brazil, in Asia, India. And I think you can see that's those kinds of influences when you come to Lisbon. You know, you see suggestions of things to do. I think it's you know, just the city center and what you can have between the experience of the tradition, but with a twist, because there's always something a bit more modern as well on the corner that you can explore, which can be suitable for a lot of people. I think it's gives some kind of uniqueness to Lisbon when you are exploring it. And then you can have activities for children. We have a beautiful aquarium in the expo where we had organized the Expo 98. So it's the modern area of the city. You know, it's great for young people with lots of nice restaurants, lots of nice activities to do as well during the day.
You've the good weather.
You have the good weather. Yeah.
It's so accessible. Like the airport jail is just very much on the outskirts of the city. You're pretty much landing in the city when you land in Lisbon Airport. So like, so you've no transfer time. It's easy in. And I think cities that are on coasts just have a certain cachet. Like we're spoiled in Dublin in terms of being close to the coast or near the coast or, you know, and Lisbon has the river and it also has the coast. And then you have those trains out to Cascais and Estoril, so you can have the perfect city break.
Yeah, Sintra,
Sintra.
The diversity.
And spring, summer, autumn, winter, it is just a gorgeous place to go. Great flight connections like Aer Lingus, Ryanair, TAP 3 times daily at least on Dublin-Lisbon. So it's just, you have to.
Yeah. And how would Porto differ to Lisbon? Is it?
No, I think like, when I look at Lisbon, I see big avenues and I see amazing light coming in through the avenues in between the hills. When I look to Porto, I look more like a medieval kind of a feeling, small cobble streets that you walk around. It's also the stone in Porto is granite, so it's a lot darker than, for example, in Lisbon, that tends to be a lot lighter buildings. Okay. So it has that character, a strong kind of a character, that it's one characteristic of the northern people as well. They tend to be a bit more stronger and pragmatic in a way. It's a World Heritage Site town with an amazing link with port wine.
Yeah.
Because on the other side of the bank of the river, you have Gaia, where the port wine cellars are. So you have that kind of a very strong link. Smaller, easier, even though it's on hills, easier to walk around in the city center. Everything is kind of combined together.
It's a lovely city.
And also very lively. Huge university, so there's always something happening there as well.
Yeah. Really nice. And another thing that like Porto is home to is the river cruises.
Yes.
And river cruising on the Douro, which, you know, we're beginning to look at for next year within the business. So it's like, it's just gorgeous. And that feeds into that wine tourism.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And the history. It is a lovely, lovely compact city. Again, also very accessible. Yeah, the airport's a little bit further out. But I think you have a tram, is it?
Yeah, we have the metro that goes all the way to the city center. You know, it takes 15 minutes to get from the airport if there's no traffic.
And flight access, Dublin, any of the other regional airports for Porto?
Yes, you have Shannon as well during the summer with the two direct flights.
Brilliant.
So you have the two.
Perfect.
Yeah. And Paul, you mentioned there about wine tourism. What's the wine tourism like in Portugal? What can people expect?
We are blessed in Portugal because the entire country is a wine region.
Yeah.
So wherever north, south, wherever
so is
you
Ireland.
Are.
So is Ireland. Except all we do here is drink. So we're a wine region. But
you are the connoisseurs.
We're consuming. Yeah. We're consuming. You're producing.
But I think the beauty and the big developments that has been like port, for example, port wine. I said Gaia. There's always was there the wine cellars and people could have go there and they could visit and taste wine, know a bit their history. But nowadays, you have a lot of these wineries that became small boutique hotels, or you have even bigger luxury sometimes hotels in some of the wine region, and you can have such a big variety. For me, just being there, enjoying the scenery, for example, of the Douro Valley, the Minho or the Alentejo, with a glass of wine, a nice meal. For me, it's perfect.
Yeah.
But people can also have wine treatments, like spa treatments with wine. So that's something that is becoming very popular there.
That's a great idea.
Walking, for example, the river cruising. I was fortunate to have the experience of going on one of those cruises. And I'm actually local from Porto. So that's someone that I would never expect. My friends, they don't go on the river cruising because when you're local, you don't tend to do those kinds of experience. But waking up, for example, and open the shutters and see beautiful vineyards on terraces, such a very nice experience. It's premium. I loved it.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, Alentejo, we had another conference one of the years in Évora, which is another beautiful region of Portugal. Like, so there's just so many nice parts to this country, quite a lot of which are unexplored. Great to drive around, great to do a fly drive, get yourself into the city or into one of the airports and then enjoy that location and then head off.
Yeah, and you speak about that, and I think one of the beauties of Portugal is that from north to south, we are speaking around 725 kilometers, the geography changes a lot.
Because
you mentioned Alentejo, and if you're in Alentejo, you are in Porto or even Alcobaça, the landscape is completely different.
Yeah.
The gastronomy will be different. Even the people are a bit different. So if you're doing, like you mentioned, a fly and drive, and you're driving through the country, what you experience is going to be very, very different. Mm. And I think that's definitely something to add. Like, small country, diverse and different experience you can have.
Yeah, so true. And just touching back on the city, Jill, and because it's getting close to Christmas.
Yeah.
Lisbon and the Christmas market in Lisbon was one of the absolute unknowns to me when we were there, because one of the points when we did mention Porto and river cruising, but Lisbon City is also a great gateway for cruise and ocean cruising. Mm-hmm. So a lot of cruises depart out of Lisbon Port.
Yeah.
And the great thing about Lisbon Port is it's also right in the city. So it's the comparisons between Barcelona and Lisbon, with the airport, the city and the port all so close together, are legendary. But we were finishing or starting a cruise in Lisbon, I can't remember which, and we overnighted after the cruise. And right across from our hotel, we were staying up near Marques de Pombal, that large roundabout, was the largest Christmas market I have ever seen.
Wow.
And I probably wasn't thinking or expecting that Lisbon, what we consider to be, even in wintertime, warmer cities than us, would have Christmas markets. This was incredible.
Wow.
Ferris wheel, ice rink, like acres and acres of gorgeous stalls with great food, great wine, great pastelnatas, great everything. And right in the city centre. And I think most Irish people aren't aware of Christmas markets in Lisbon being as wow as they are.
Yeah, we don't associate Christmas market with Portugal. Madeira is another beautiful Christmas market, for example.
Okay.
With a bit of more warmth, because there will be 18 to 20 degrees.
Yeah.
So that's the twist. I think to have like a more cold Christmas market, you'd have to go more to the mountains, and we have a few other ones. Cabeça, for example, city.
I'm quite okay with the mild, warm Christmas market. That suits me fine.
Yeah.
It's something different, that I think that people can enjoy during this time of the year. Yeah.
And even like just touching on Christmas, what's Christmas like in Portugal? Like, what would you expect?
We are very traditional. We like to socialize a lot. So Christmas is actually in Portugal, Christmas Eve tends to be the big start.
Oh, okay.
We have a big cod fish at the table, all the family together, and we stay at the table drinking a nice wine, port wine, and all everything that we are. A lot of desserts. So it tends to be a lot about family reunion,
great,
being together.
Yeah.
So those are anything. Lots, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, we like that.
Yeah.
Sounds like here.
Yeah.
Except we'd swap the card for the turkey now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then even just to finish off, we've mentioned golf a few times as well, but weddings and honeymoons would be very big for Portugal, wouldn't they?
And you'll be surprised that the main market for weddings in Portugal is the Irish market.
Wow.
It's true. So the Irish tend to be the international
the
market
one.
Coming to Portugal to have weddings is the Irish market.
So combine a holiday and
get wedding.
Yeah, and get married. Yeah. Yes,
I think it's a bit, it's the good value for money.
Yeah,
It's the nice seaside landscapes, the quality of the hotels.
Yeah.
I think when you combine the accessibility as well.
I think the accessibility for Portugal in terms of the flights from Ireland to all of the various airports in Portugal now is just incredible. And the frequency.
Yes.
You know, like that adds to it. Like it's just spectacular, the volume. It's really, really good.
And it's also great because a lot of the weddings also are in the shoulder seasons, which supports.
Which is great because like you don't want to be there in the heat.
Yeah.
And even because if you want to make it a bit more special, you can sometimes privatize a beach just for yourself and have your wedding by the beach. But of course, in the summertime, peak of the summertime, it's impossible to do that. But
And then following on from the weddings, Jill, family holidays.
Family holidays, They're important as well. They're very, very important.
And I think Portugal just scores so highly for the family market in terms of ticking the box and in terms of looking at, you know, I know from our point of view in Click and Go, we have a very strong adult market for Portugal, but we equally have a really strong family market, especially in the summertime. And I think families just enjoy it because it's really safe.
Yeah.
You know, it's less hot because it's the Atlantic coast rather than the Mediterranean. Quality of accommodation and the value for money.
Yeah. Just brilliant.
Just really, really
I think
good.
Definitely safety. People like to go. People feel comfortable when they go there.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when we look, the majority of the Irish people, I think, know already Portugal.
They do?
Yeah.
And that kind of familiarity, they feel safe, they feel comfortable, I think is very special for the families.
Yeah.
I think so. And holidays. I think that was really useful for us today in terms of, you know, broadening the appeal and kind of naming places and suggesting destinations for people to go to because they already love Portugal, but there's a lot more to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, and do. Lots and do. To do. Yeah.
And to explore, yeah.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Carlos. That was great. We've got a lot more insight into Portugal. And thank you for listening. If you'd like to follow us on our socials, we are on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And we also have a YouTube channel, so you can subscribe there. Thanks again for listening. And thank you so much, Paul and Carlos, for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for organizing. Thanks, Carlos, for being our guest.
No, thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.